We go then. David, thanks for having me here today. I've come to see you specifically because I believe you were responsible for a nursery at one time, and I'm interested in that avenue. But I'm also, of course, interested in your general background. When did you start in the forestry, David? And did you go to forestry school at all?
Yes, I did. I started in 1949 as a forest worker in Mortimer Forest, Ludlow.
Right.
Now, the reason for that is that they said at the time, you've all got to go through training, you've got to do the nitty-gritty, and so you know what it's all about.
Right.
And it gives you time to change your mind if you don't like that sort of work. So we had to do everything that a forest worker would do, like felling trees, planting, weeding. But a nursery worker, although I never had anything to do with a nursery down there.
Right.
Just the general run-of-the-mill work in the forest.
Right. And then you went to forest school after that?
Yes, yes. I was moved on from there to Gwydir Forestry Schools in Capercaig.
Yes.
And we were there for 2 years, and we did everything there, from paperwork to every item that you can think of related to forestry.
Right.
And that was, we had exams.
Right.
And we passed them successfully. And from there we were moved on, or posted as the word would be, to various parts of Wales. For some reason or other, they would say, if you go to a Welsh school, the chances are you go to a Welsh forest.
Right.
Well, all right, so be it. Not everybody was happy to do that, but we did. And I finished up in Corris. And I enjoyed my time there very much.
Right.
Just doing the ordinary general run-of-the-mill work for two and a half years. And then I was moved over to the roads department, as it was called, whereby you made the roads. They had to be planned, and we had all sorts of machines and so on for making these new roads up through the forest.
This again was in Corris, was it?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, but it was not only Corris, it included Aberangus as well.
Right.
And even down to Pennell.
Right, yes, I know.
And Towyn.
Right.
Not Towy, Towyn.
Towyn, yes.
Towyn, yes, Abergynolwyn way.
Yes.
See. That was, so it gave... It gave a tremendous variation of work, and you met all the other people in the area, and it was very interesting. I enjoyed it much immensely.
And where did you move on from there?
Well, from there, I was moved up to Clackynog, near Ruthin, North Wales.
Right.
And I was there for... That was in 1958. We'd just got married.
Right.
October... August 1958, I moved up there. We were married in October 1958, and we had to wait until 1959 before a house was available for us.
Right.
Once again, it was a bigger forest. Should we say it was more modern in some ways, but it was rougher in other ways, by which I mean there was no electricity and everything was very basic up there
right. In
those days. Where it was in Corris, it came much earlier.
All right.
In Corris, surprisingly, whether it was the way Manweb worked things, I don't know.
Right.
However, it was again much the same sort of story. Running the forest roads came into that a lot because the Clackynog was a fairly young forest, and it had vast areas without any access.
Right.
Now the trees had grown to the stage when they needed thinning out. And there was no means of getting into it, into the forest. So roads had to be put in, and that was a priority job.
Right.
So once again, I was involved in the planning and working of the roads. But staff was much shorter in those days. It is contrary to what one might say today, because you think they're diminishing all the time. But
yeah. In
fact, it was comparatively early, shall we say. And they were still recruiting people,
yeah. So
we were still a bit short of staff. So apart from the roads that I had to do, I had to do the general run of the forest as well.
Right.
It was quite a busy place.
Uh-huh.
Well then, as I said earlier on, regarding...
Circumstances forced you to ask for a transfer, yes?
Yes, yes. Back down to Aberystwyth area.
Right.
So they fitted me into the Ystwyth Forest, and I was living, or we were living, I should say, in Llanavon.
Yes.
And there we stayed until 1976, when we were able to buy a house in Llanbadon.
Right, so you were actually living in a forestry house there?
Yes.
Right.
At the bottom of Trevrew Hill, Gwen Ystwyth.
Yes, I know.
Six houses there.
Yes.
And we lived in number two.
Right.
It was quite nice. A nice garden, quite a nice sunny place. House was well made. But I just felt at the time, well, if I don't buy a house, would I ever be able to? You know, yeah. I'd move quickly. So we bought this house in Llanbadon. And then I was allowed to travel from Llanbadon out to Llanavon every day for the work and come back again in the evenings.
Right. So, was this the time that you, you finished your days with the forestry in Llanavon, yes?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, I did.
Or in the Ystwyth Forestry, I should say.
Yes, yeah. All my working life has been in the forest, 40 years.
Right.
But bar one, when I was in the university. But that counted towards my pension, so I still have a pension based on 40 years of service.
Right. So, was this the time then that you were responsible for a nursery in the Ystwyth?
Yes. I was aware of nurseries, and we did work up at the Cynog and so on. I was never heavily involved in the nursery work up there.
Until you were at the Ystwyth?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Now, as I said, this is what I'm particularly interested in, because I haven't come across anybody else yet who's done nursery work. Would you be able to describe to me the processes? I mean, for instance, where did you get the seed from and what happened to it afterwards?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, certainly. Now, we better start at the beginning and deal with the seeds.
Right.
Now, we didn't actually produce much of our seed in Llanavon.
Right.
We called it importing, but I don't mean it came from overseas.
Right.
It probably came from Alice Holt, or I think that it was Delamere or Thetford.
Right.
Alice Holt was the main place.
Yes.
Where the seed came from. It was Sitka spruce, Norway spruce. You familiar with those?
Yes, ones? I am.
Larch, probably noble fir, whatever was required, and a certain amount of hardwoods as well.
Right.
So now then, the seeds again. Well, with the conifers, you had a seed bed.
Right.
And I've been trying to work this out. As far as I can remember, the bed must have been about 3 foot 6 or 4 feet wide. The reason for that was it had to fit the track of the tractors.
All right, yes.
And I can't remember for certain what is the track.
But in any case, it must the track of the tractors.
Yes, so the tractor could run up and down the lines of seedbeds.
Without damaging.
Spraying and so on, without damaging.
Yeah.
So that was the reason for that. And I think that it was 4 feet. I was looking at my car just now and I thought, it couldn't have been 3 feet, much too narrow. And the tractor in the old days seemed to be quite wide things, you see.
Right.
So, all right, I'm sure they were about 4 feet.
Yes.
And now, you had to dig this up. But, I mean, when I say you didn't do it manually, the tractor would plough it, you see.
Right.
And fluff it up, you see. And then the men would fork it over and rake it then roll it.
Right.
Make it level. There were strings up either side.
Yeah.
So you kept, say, 4 feet width all the way down the field. It made it nice and level and firm. And then we had the seed that had to be scattered over the seed bed.
Right.
Now, as far as I can remember, there were two men carrying a rack, like a stretcher, one on each side, the handle each.
Yes.
And they would riddle this.
All right.
And walk down the bed.
So riddle the seed over the bed?
Yes. Yes.
Right.
And it had to be even as far as possible.
Yes.
Right. Having done that, it then had to be protected because of the burrs and so on.
Right.
So we put some very fine white chippings on top of all that.
Right.
And that completed the sowing of the seed beds. But you had to do it at the right time of the year. Chances are that usually it was done in the spring.
Right.
And then you would see germination coming on early part of the summer. But and you couldn't touch them at that stage. I mean, hopefully there were not too many weeds about.
Right.
We did spray, before germination,
right.
We would spray the surface with some weeds. It was rather primitive stuff in those days. I think it was white spirits, I believe, to kill off the weeds, you see.
Right.
But of course, the trick was you had to do it before the seeds germinated, because
right.
if you did, it was disaster. It killed
yeah.
the seed as well. The germination would be spoiled.
Right.
So that was done every now and again. But of course, you couldn't keep it all down. So as the summer came on, you'd see a green sheen appearing over the seed bed. And you get down on your knees and look carefully at it, and you could see the seed coming
weeds.
Through, just like blades of grass, you see. When you had to, you left it then, you couldn't do any chemical spraying in those days, at that point. So any weeding that you had to do, like major weeds, if you saw a dandelion there, or tufts of grass, you have to try and gently ease them out, you see. Sometimes it wasn't possible.
So this was hand weeding then?
Yes, hand weeding. But anyway, the seeds would grow, and the trees would get to quite a reasonable size.
About an inch and a half?
Yes, that's right. And still, you wouldn't touch them again until well on into the summer, when you'd think, are they big enough to move? Because they're crowded in the seed beds.
Yes.
And they had to be lined out. As it was termed, in nice tidy rows and well spaced about an inch apart, you see.
Right.
So, all right, if you judged that they were strong enough and ready to be lined out, you would lift them.
How was that done, man? Was it done by hand or manually?
No, the tractor would come along with a bar, undercutting bar.
Right.
And it would come underneath these, and it was like a ripple of a wave going down the seed bed, you see.
All right, so
seeds were loosened.
All right, so it sort of got under the roots as well then?
That's right.
All right.
Yes, you could lift them up.
Right.
And put them in boxes, ready for lining out. So if you were short of space, you could then turn that seed bed into lines. Now, it followed the same width, once again, because of the tractor.
Right.
For spraying, you see. But the lining out was a different process altogether. You would have to, at one point, the seeds could stand over throughout the winter.
Right.
And so you could get lining out going on in the spring at the same time as sowing another seed bit.
Oh, right, okay.
You see? So you didn't line out in when the weather was bad.
So the lining out was done approximately 12 months after sowing them?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And sometimes 2 years.
Right.
So it just depended. You didn't denote the seed. If it was a one-year seedling, it was one plus naught.
All right.
But if it went on for 2 years before you could move it, it was a two plus.
Right.
And then one year in the lines, you would say.
All right.
Two plus one, and so on, or two plus two. If it was 2 years in the lines, 4 years old altogether then.
All right.
2 years in the seed beds, 2 years in the lines.
Right.
Okay. That's 4 years.
So these trees were 4 years old when they actually went out to the fields, as it were, to be planted as part of the forest.
Yes. They did not necessarily always that. If they were very good ones and growing under ideal conditions, you could get one plus one.
2 years?
Two years.
All right.
Yes. One plus two was the normal.
Right.
As the seed would start a bit slow, it would be two plus two.
So it depended on the climatic conditions then?
Yes, very much so. And the soil conditions.
Yes, of course.
Some nurseries had much better soil than others. The one at Llanavon was rather stony.
Right.
And that would cause a lot of problems.
Before that very nice coffee break, David, we were discussing lining out in the nursery.
Mm.
Would you like to pick it up from there?
Yes, I will, Tom. I'll carry on to that point. I think I said that the lines are based very much on seed beds, by which I mean there were strips going down the hill. But having said that, you could also line horizontally across the hill.
Right.
You see? It just depended on the what took your fancy. There was no hard and fast rule about
right.
it. The only thing was that if on a hillside, if you lined out horizontally,
yeah,
you got a lot of erosion because of the rain washing the soil down, you see. Whereas if you lined out vertically up and down the hill, well, there were channels for the water to run down, you
right.
see. So. But anyway, the thing about the lining out was that it was, again, had to be so more or less 4 feet wide, rather like a stair carpet. If you imagine laying out a stair carpet
yeah.
down across the floor, you see, and you lined out across there. Now, you had a board which was just over 4 feet wide with little V slots cut in like that.
Yes.
With a rubber flanges to protect the seedlings. And there were 50 in this board that you...
50 Vs?
Yes, 50 Vs. So you pushed in 50 seedlings into this board. So you were holding a board out like this.
Right.
With 50 potential young plants all in a row, each one in its little slot
right.
an inch apart. You see?
So it was some kind of jig then?
Yes, call it a jig. But before you actually put them into the ground, you had to do some spade work.
Right.
So you had to make sure that the ground was prepared and you had to do a trench. Now, you had a board, two boards nailed together like that at right angles to each other.
Yes.
See? So you were able to keep your foot on the one board, which is flat on the surface.
Yeah.
And you use the other board as a guide.
As a straight line?
To a straight line downwards, you see?
Right.
Now, this was the part that always used to cause problems. If it was too dry, if the weather was too dry and the soil was dry or stony, you couldn't get what was called a decent trench.
Right.
For the roots of the seedlings to drop into.
Right. Because it could keep filling up.
Yes, filling up, you see. And the bergs were on piecework.
Yeah.
So, of course, they were in a hurry,
yeah.
and you had to watch out that they were not sort of skimping the jobs, so to speak, you see.
Right.
However, we assume that they'd done a nice tidy trench, and so they put this board, which had 50 trees, on the surface with the roots hanging down in the trench, 50 right. of them. So then that was the most difficult part, getting the trench ready. After that, fill it in
right.
with a spade. And walk along the line and stamp it firm, you see? And then fork over the area. I forget how much space there was between each row.
About 9 inches?
Something like that. About that, yes. And you also had another board with two hands on which you could tamp the ground with like this, you see? So the equipment needed for lining out consisted of a board with V slots in it,
right.
with a rubber belting as making the slot
yeah.
comfortable for the plant to go into, holding 50 plants. Then you had, it had a vertical board going down into the trench.
So keep it straight line.
Yes, I think so. No.
Tell me a correction
there. No, that isn't right. Because you couldn't get the board. How did it work? You could release the vertical part.
All right.
From the horizontal part.
Right.
It was a bar. It wasn't really a board, it was a bar, you see?
Right.
You could take that off. Then you could fill it in.
All right.
And then you could tilt the board where the trees were slotted into, like that.
Right.
Release them from the... release the seedlings out of the board.
Right.
And there they were, all in a nice row in the soil.
And these were 12-month or a year-old seedlings?
Yeah, or two, depending
or two.
On the circumstances.
Right.
Yes.
Tell me, do you know the soil or the material that these were planted in?
Yeah.
Were they of any particular composition or you just used the soil that was there?
If it was poor soil, yes, you had to put fertilizer down.
Right.
Very much sort of garden type of stuff.
Right.
See? But bear in mind now, Sitka spruce, Norway spruce, they wanted an acidic type of soil.
Acidic.
Yeah, so maybe you would have to add a bit of peaty stuff.
Right.
Unless the soil itself was of an alkali, of an acidic nature,
right,
which was ideal,
right.
But they weren't always like that. Some nurses, the one at Llanavon, it was more of a loamy nature.
All right.
And I can't remember now what we did to encourage them. We put right. something down.
But I have been told of a situation where, you know, they used to collect pine needles and bring them into the nursery and allow them to rot so that it would create a natural environment.
Yes, yes.
That where these trees, or assimilate a natural environment, where these seedlings would grow naturally in these rotted pine needles.
Yes.
Did you do that at Llanavon?
Not very often. I do remember it being done occasionally, yes. We had plenty of pine needles we could, and or even ordinary leaves, you know?
Right.
Beech leaves and so on.
So basically what you're saying is that the rules were very much like what you wanted to do or what one does in a normal garden at home.
Quite, yes. Now, there's one point I forgot to mention about the seeds. Before, you had to do a stratification of seeds to encourage the germination, because the seed has a tough outer crust,
right,
which has to soften, you see. So they had to be stratified, and that could be done perhaps under glass in a big greenhouse, you see, to sort of prepare them.
So what do you actually mean by that? What did you actually do? Rub them or something?
No. Oh, the only rubbing we did was to put some red oxide stuff on to try and discourage mice from eating them, you see.
But what did this heat or put them under glass do to the seedlings?
It assists in the germination process, and it would tend to soften the outer skin.
All right.
Yes, it would soften the outer skin a bit and get them ready for going into the soil, and then they would germinate more quickly.
All right. And what did you call that again?
Stratification.
Stratification?
Yes.
Never heard of that term before.
No.
So the dryness, the drying the outer crust then,
yeah.
they would germinate a little quicker?
If you could soften that.
Soften it,
yes. Yes.
Okay.
You take now, say, a walnut to go to the other extreme, see? Which is as tough as anything, you know, you've got to use a crunch practically. But when it's in the soil, then it does soften, and eventually the walnut will
germinate.
Break through and germinate, you see.
Right.
Or even in your garden with peas or beans.
Yes, we put them in water.
That's it, yes.
But in this case, you put them under glass in
here. Yeah, there's got to be a damp atmosphere.
All right.
The glass to give a bit of heat, and you would dampen the soil.
So it would be fairly humid in there?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you've got to dampen them to soften the outer skin and get them started.
So you've told us about the seeds, and then the seedlings and transplanting out. Yeah, how long were these seedlings left in the ground then? Did you have to move them again and create a bigger gap between them, or were they left there then?
The ones that were left, do you mean?
No, once you've planted out the seed, 12 months or two.
The plants in the lines, yes,
yeah.
the young plants. Yes, have I completed the process of lining out? I hope I've made it clear.
Yes, I think so.
50 in a row,
yes.
Easy for stock taking.
Right.
Count, you know, 50 down,
right.
And so on. And about 9 inches, I think it was, between each row. And the process that I've described was repeated all the way down
the bed,
you see,
right,
until you, and then when you'd finished your bed, start again. You could do it. There's another way. You didn't have to use these boards. You could do it by hand. Some people used to prefer that. You put a long string out,
yeah,
from top to bottom, or across the hillside, you see, and again you do your trench the same as I've been describing, and then you'd have a handful of seedlings,
yeah.
And you'd put them in like this, with one hand. And a bit of salt.
Like we would do at home, basically.
On your knee, and you do this, pushing them in.
Right.
And filling a bit of soil, pushing a bit of soil against each seedling to space them out. And to firm them up, you see. But if they hadn't done the trench properly, as I was describing, because of this maybe stony conditions, or it was a dry spell, and the soil was falling down, the men would try and get away with it, or push them in sort of thing, and shove some soil against it. So it was the seedling grew what we rather like a hockey stick, as we called it. The roots were down horizontally, not vertically, horizontally.
So they were at an angle.
Yes, and the tree was growing up vertically.
Yeah.
So we had what we call hockey sticks. So that was not a good idea at all.
All right, so that interfered with the growth, then, you think?
Oh, for planting and so on, yes, it did spoil the tree.
All right.
Yes. We had to watch out for that. That was a major problem.
So it was important that the tree and the roots grew vertically, then?
That's right, yes, yes. Ah. Mm.
So, going back to my to the question I asked earlier, how long were these kept here, then?
Yeah, that's right. Now then, hopefully they'd be there for a year. The seedlings would be in the lines for a year.
Yes.
Now that means that they would have been 1 year in the seed bed.
Yes.
1 year in the lines, so they would call that a 1+1.
Right.
Now, under good conditions, they should be ready to go to the forest. They needed to be 6 inches.
Right.
Sort of thing. They could be 3 inches.
Right.
You have to grade them. Assuming they were ready to go out, right, you have the lifting process, which had to be done for the planting season. So that took place in the spring. Orders would come in, forests were all around England and Scotland, Wales would be wanting trees. They'd send their orders in, and we would have to send thousands and all millions of seedlings away to, well, I keep calling them seedlings, all right, young trees,
yeah,
out to the various forests for their planting programs.
Right.
Planting acres, as it was in those days,
yeah,
hectares now. A virgin land for future timber. So we were had to lift all these plants and bundle them up into, I think, depending on the size of the plant, whether you would have 100 in a bundle, or so small you might get 200, and then they would go into bags. You could have 1,000 or more,
right,
or 2,000. It had to be consistent anyway.
Right.
If you were putting 1,000 in a bag, you stuck to 1,000 and you labelled it yourself.
Right.
Then they wanted 500,000 bags, and you want 500 bags, plants going away, you see.
So how many...
The stock-taking process had to come in between. At the end of the growing season, you had to do a stock-taking in the nursery, and you had to assess the seedlings that were growing well, and they say, right, they can be lifted next year. Or if they hadn't grown well, you'd have to put them in a category for standing over or staying in the seedbed till the following year.
Right.
So there'd be 2 years in the seedbeds. And then you had to go down the lines and assess all the trees there. You had a special frame that you put over the beds, and you count the trees in that frame. I'm afraid I don't remember what it was, whether it was about two feet down and across the
right,
the bed, you see. And you would say, right, there's so many, half of them are 2 inches, or there's a quarter of them are 1 inch, and the others are too small. And so you would categorize, put it down on a piece of paper on our special form in their categories. So by the end of stock taking, you knew exactly how many plants you had of a three or four inch size. It could easily be that size,
yeah.
Or were there any sort of 2 to 3s?
So you were assessing what would be available then for planting.
That's right, the next year. Stock taking was done in the late summer.
Right.
And you were getting all your stocks ready and sending them up to headquarters, they were responsible for allocating the plants around the countryside.
So how many trees do you think you grew in a season? Do you remember? Because it seems to me that the accounting system was just as important as the growing technique, because there were so many numbers involved.
All you've got to know, yes, you had to know what you were being able to produce. I mean, seeds came by weight.
But you're not able to translate that into how many thousands you grew in yet?
Well, you could, yes, because you knew how many pounds of seed were sown, and you knew also how many trees you got out of it.
Right.
Young trees. But I can't remember the technical part of that.
But was it tens of thousands of trees a year?
That we sold?
Yeah.
Oh, millions.
Millions?
Oh, yes.
From your nursery?
Probably.
Good grief.
Hmm. Yes.
So the accounting system was important then?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because I, whilst you were describing that, I couldn't understand the emphasis on that, but now I do.
Yeah. I mean, when I say millions, I mean, it was not unusual to have 2-3 million plants out of that one at Llanhaven.
Good grief.
And at Birch Grove, where they grew more Christmas trees on Birch Grove than Sitka spruce. And they were sent off for growing Christmas trees. I don't remember what their figures were, but I can remember doing stock taking and having 2-3 million plants available.
Right. Mm. Did you employ women in the nursery?
No, not in those days.
Right.
No.
And how many men do you think you had then, or were there in the nurseries? How many?
Yes, well, I would have said somewhere around 45 men at one time, but when it was in full swing. Now, there were four nurseries. We had the one at Llanhaven in the village,
yes,
which grew mainly hardwoods, and willows. We were specialised in willows,
right,
because it was a damp site, you see.
Right.
And then the one on Trevrew Hill,
yes, I know,
which was, I did more in there than anywhere else.
Right.
In that nursery, which was Sitka, Norway, larch, a certain amount of shrubs and some hardwoods and so on. And then there was Birch Grove. You know, but
yeah, I know. Yes,
yes. Where they did more to do with Norways,
right,
and Christmas trees, and then finally there was the Heathland Nursery that I haven't actually said much about, which was seed beds only. Being a Heathland Nursery, it had an acidic soil,
right,
and we could cultivate this, and it was ideal for getting Sitka spruce to start.
Right.
Because Sitka spruce grows in a nice sort of
acidic soil,
up on the rough grounds in the mountains.
Peaty soil.
Yeah, that's right. Hmm. But I don't remember the quantities that.
But then you said that was just used for seedlings. They were then moved on to other nurseries, then, were they?
Oh yes. I mean, you could bring them down from the Heathland, line them out in Llanhaven,
right,
if you liked, or Birch Grove or whatever. But you couldn't line out up there.
So, would you, I mean, from my assessment from what you've been describing now was that the basic technique of growing a tree, for those who are familiar with a garden situation, is not too difficult.
I know.
But surely it's the volume and the size and the quantities where some good management was required, was
indeed
it?
Indeed. I mean, it's only really like these modern nurseries that you have today, where they garden centres. Where do they get all their stuff from? It comes by thousands and thousands, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, it's all done on the same sort of idea.
Right.
I don't know whether you've been up to Newman's garden centre.
Yes.
Capitoli. Yes. Have you been inside his nurseries there?
Yeah.
Well, that's on a vast scale. And the number of plants that he has, not as much as we had, of course, in terms of trees, but it's the same sort of idea, large mass production of plants.
Right.
But you see, all these nurseries are closed now. It was too expensive, and I suppose we were not making money, or not making sufficient money. So they closed them all, and they have a few sites now where they get all their plants from. Now, seed beds, where seeds, in other words, would come from Annis Holt.
Yes.
And Delamere.
Delamere, yeah.
We went to see Delamere with the retirement fellowship back in the summer. The system's much the same, but, you know, computers and...
Yeah, it's all automated.
Automated. None of this hand-lining out there. It's all done with machines.
Yeah. So.
And I think Thetford also is another place for... producing a lot of plants, and those forests will more or less do nothing else but that,
right,
and they're supplying the whole countryside. Yeah, so they've done away with all these others.
So it's more centralised as
well.
That's
right, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Looking back then, David, on your career, and especially your time in the nursery, how do you see it then? Remembering that the forestry commenced in 1919.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the Forestry Commission started in 1919 after the Great War,
yes,
when all the timber supply in the country was cut down, devastated almost, and people thought, we've got to have a stock of timber, so we are going to do something about this. And they formed the Forestry Commission to restock the country after it was denuded of timber in the 1914-18 war.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of planting did take place in the 20s and 30s. But the commission, as it is today, was very rough and ready in the 30s. And 40s during the Second World War. It was after the Second World War, round about when the war ended in 1945, say 1947, it was really getting going and they wanted people. And that was a time when we were sort of still feeling our way and developing ways of working, say, better in the nursery and extracting timber, and roads were needed which were never thought of before the war. So it was an era when we were
pioneering,
yes, thank you, that's the word, an era when we were pioneering, and people of my age now look back on it as a very nice time. Today, all right, they're all into computers, and we've got modern technology, which is a mystery to the likes of me and my colleagues of our time. But we did manage, and we had ways of doing stock-taking, as I was telling you about, and I think they were quite successful. They probably took longer, but we got the answers.
Yes.
And we made the best we could of whatever we could think of to do the job.
So you felt that after the Second World War then, that was the time that there were real changes in the forestry, and where those changes led to the development as we see today then.
That's right, yes. It was real expansion, and of course it took on a lot of labour,
yes,
which was necessary in those days. But as the time went on, it became obvious that the Forestry Commission didn't need such a large labour force. So having reached a peak, shall we say, in right about the end of 1960 or in the 70s, then it started to decline in numbers.
Right.
But it's more efficient.
And leaving it as we see it today, then?
Yes, yes, yes.